Welcome to Skills of the Future, a podcast by Perennial Talent. In this mini-series, we are talking about competencies over coffee.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast, Skills of the Future, and our mini-series on competencies over coffee. In this episode, we're going to be talking about defining and rolling out competency models. My name is Andrea Butler, and I'm your host and principal consultant at Perennial Talent. My guest today is Adam Culligan. He is a Canadian and Australian dual citizen. He's been living in and out of North America, Australia, and Europe for more than a decade. A graduate of the University of Alberta in Canada, Adam achieved a double degree in kinesiology and a secondary education minoring in business. He immediately found his passion in leading and developing others, from guiding outdoor pursuits in the Rocky Mountains to coaching ice hockey in Japan, to building corporate leaders across APAC and the EMEA, as well as the American regions. He has been helping people reach their potential across the globe. Passionate about designing and delivering leadership development programs that create change, Adam's been working with emerging talent, new managers, and senior leaders for the past decade. After spending the better part of a decade heading up the global design and delivery function for a global leadership development firm, Adam has set out on his own and most recently has been working with one of Canada's largest energy companies, helping to shape their leadership culture. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you. I immediately regret giving you all of that information because it really waxes poetic after a bit.
It's always good to share your accomplishments.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's start with our fun icebreaker question then, Adam. What's something that you've watched or read that you'd recommend?
Great question. And I would love to have an answer about something super intelligent or potentially socially defining. And maybe this isn't totally, but a couple of weeks ago, I finally, much to my own chagrin, dove into a Canadian program called Shoresy, spelled S-H-O-R-E-S-Y, streaming on Crave and HBO, I think. And nonetheless, it's about a Northern Canadian hockey town and a player on that team. And if you've played hockey in North America, especially in Canada and in small towns at any sort of elite level, you've been on that team, you've been in that town, you've been around those people, and they did a really great job of just visualizing and dialing to 12 in some instances for humor, what kind of happens. And one of the things I love about it, the reason I share it, Andrea, is they had such incredible diverse representation in the show. So, you know, like the owner of the hockey team is an Indigenous woman, and it's not talked about in any sort of like, oh my goodness way. It's just, that's just the way it is. And I loved that we're starting to think that way a little bit more broadly. So yes, hilarious. Yes, goofy, but also making a bit of a more progressive statement as well in terms of representation.
Oh, that's amazing. I'll have to add that one to my list for sure. So then moving on to our more topical questions of the day, starting with Adam, what are some of the challenges that you've seen when you've had to go in and help folks to define and then roll out competencies?
A couple of different challenges, Andrea, and it's a good question because the challenges do change, but you can almost put them into two buckets. And for me, one of the first largest challenges was always overcoming the academic desire to deliver best practice, by definition, on point, quote unquote, competency frameworks, and then have those translate to folks across your business. And depending on the nature of your organization, you may or may not have folks that have spent a better part of their career in that space. So when you define org competencies, it really comes down to what do you want to see from other people? And there are competencies and then there's behaviors. So the second part of that bucket is then once you've identified what you want the competencies to be, for me, it's always, okay, well, how do we want that competency lived in our business? What does success look like for us? And of course, as you can imagine, there's a lot of different perspectives and a lot of different lenses on what success looks like. So it can be challenging across different enterprises for sure.
So don't just take something off the shelf and run with it, in other words.
My God, no. And I appreciate you sharing that because there are, you could throw a rock down the internet hallway and find 5-6 competency frameworks in the dozens or hundreds that other organizations have used to success and are now they're sharing with the world from a very magnanimous perspective to make sure we can help other businesses find them. But they worked for them. You know, maybe they worked for you, yes, but you really got to get your business involved in building those things. And more often than not, by the people that are actually going to have to live them.
Absolutely. And in terms of kind of key competencies, are there any right now that you think are particularly important, whether it's from the organization's perspective or even from the perspective of, say, someone's individual performance?
Yes, the ones that seem to come up with most organizations right now, not shockingly, Andrea, change agility and empathy. Certainly people are, you know, there's always competencies around, you know, accountability, integrity, performance, excellence, these kinds of things. More and more we're realizing that, especially during the pandemic and in this return to office, many of us continued to work. We're seeing folks think differently about the way they work. And as organizations, leaders in those organizations, we're going to have to shift the way we view success. And so the individuals themselves have to be change agile, meaning I got to be ready to shift and move in a different direction as we did as a planet approximately 2 years ago, two plus. And then as leaders, one of the things that I'm still noticing, and it certainly is a bit of a North American construct, but certainly is matched in other regions around the globe, is the idea of the harder you work, the better life you're leading and the better you're representing your business and the more, the higher performing you are within an organization. And I think that we're going to collectively have to shift the way that looks in order for us to genuinely measure what success looks like. And that's where the empathy piece comes in, is recognizing what does the other person need to be successful and what does success look like for me? And the idea for me is like, I'm not looking for an endless stream of success from you. So if you achieve A, then I'm just going to set B. And if you achieve B, I'm just going to set C. I'm going to set goal A. And presuming you achieve that, I got to be willing to kind of not care how you get there, provided, of course, it matches within the culture of your business.
Absolutely. There always has to be that kind of marriage of the what and the how.
Yeah, absolutely. And more recently, I know that that's one of the organizations I was working with, and the big push was to move away from just measuring what. I mean, I'm sure many of your previous podcasters, as well as yourself, Andrew, have said the phrase, you know, what gets measured gets done. And so, you know, certainly the observable accountabilities of people's roles, that's easier to measure. The intangibles of how you got your work done, the qualitative measurement of those things are continuing to be a challenge, but we're seeing businesses put much more energy and resources behind finding ways to measure that how, to measure that intangible, because we know that's why people stay.
And that is a nice segue to my next question for you then. What are the future threats or pain points then if an organization doesn't take the time to start measuring and defining that how?
Well, certainly our emerging workforce is looking to be inspired by the people that they work with and the work that they get to do around those people. And rather uninspiring behaviors such as, we can call them archaic if we like, but certainly that hierarchical mentality, that approach to presenteeism, you know, if I can see you, then I know you're being successful, as opposed to, can I see what you're doing and is that successful? Then we start looking at the value that our emerging workforce puts around the how. I don't think it's any surprise to anybody, and certainly I'm not going to quote any stats now. I'm sure you have plenty, Andrea, around the duration of any individual's stay at one organization. The idea of the 5, 10, 15, 20-year employee is sort of going the way of the dodo as the workforce becomes more empowered to seek out their own quality of life. And so as they become more empowered, as we become more empowered, then we're going to be looking for organizations that care about how work gets done. We're no longer interested in working for people that are going to be ogres and bullies and irreverent towards people as they get the job done. We want to work at places where we can have an impact, but also feel inspired to be good corporate citizens. I've said for many years that, you know, as Adam Pelligan set out on my career, I always wanted to change the world, right? That altruistic view that you have in your 20s and then maybe even into your early 30s, I'm going to change the world. And as you continue to mature, you think, okay, well, what tools do I have at my disposal? What platforms do I have to change the world? And now in the work that we do, Andrea, we get to impact the world one corporate community and one corporate citizen at a time. And that's where we can try and change it. And so if organizations take the same mentality, then they'll have a lot more to sell in terms of retaining today's workforce. I don't know if that actually answered the question now that I've finished.
No, I think it absolutely does. Retention, certainly in today's workforce, is becoming a critical issue.
And yes,
I personally think competencies are one way to tackle that. One of many, obviously.
I agree, because and what it does is it kind of sets the expectation. So if through your onboarding, you view the competencies and we talk about as an organization, like, this is how we measure how work gets done here. Yes, when you get into your role, you're going to understand what you have to get done. And certainly we've gone through our own we've used our own diligence to ensure that you have the technical capabilities to do the what. Now here's how we expect you to work here. And that becomes our culture. And people want to work for cultures. They don't necessarily want to work for businesses anymore.
Absolutely. So then if you're an organization and you want to improve retention and really establish that culture, are there specific tools or programs you'd recommend that they focus on? How would you recommend they get started?
I think there are certainly there's lots of platforms and organizations that you can go to that provide research and provide statistics that will allow you to set up the way you want to run your business, which then can lean into retention. And of course, certainly in today's workforce, attraction. In terms of to me, it's more activities than tools, because we're really talking about people creating a culture of expectations within an organization, within a community. It would be the same way as if you had your own neighborhood community board, right? And you're like, so what tools, where would we go on the internet to find how to build a good community? Well, you wouldn't. You would think, well, what kind of community do I want to live in? What kind of community do I want my kids to grow up in? What kind of community do I want to start, own, or continue to run a business in? And once you have that conversation with all of the necessary folks that live in that community, well, then it should become fairly straightforward. There might be, you know, in terms of competencies, you know, you might be able to come up with 15, but, you know, 10 of them we can put into maybe 5 or 6 buckets. And then how do we skinny this down so the expectations aren't infinite? However, in terms of activities, to me, it's always about you got to find a few people of influence, champions in your organization. And if I can be so bold, ideally not in HR, so it doesn't feel like an HR program, that sit with you on a committee of experts, probably from HR, that will work together hand in hand to build that level of expectation for the work for a place that people that are already there want to work at. As soon as you start isolating, certainly, you know, HR experts into a space and say, what does good culture look like? And you go and find another organization and say, okay, so what kind of, okay, well, pizza Fridays, and there needs to be a bar in the kitchen area, and you should be able to bring your dog and all those other things. And don't get me wrong, I'm in for all of those pieces, especially dogs at work. That may or may not land in the community that you want to live in. And there's certainly some low-hanging fruit you can go after, but the long and short of it is, to me, culture becomes what we tolerate, not what we say we want. And if what we say we want and what we tolerate are two different things, there's no tool that can bring you back from that. It's all about behaviors that get measured daily.
So I like that you're talking about this idea of the champion and that this can't be an HR, solely HR driven initiative. Do you have any other advice for someone who, you know, is maybe looking to start defining competencies and starting to think about how to roll them out across their own organization?
Yeah, job one is talk to the people that have been there the longest and experienced success and see and like, yeah, and asking them broad questions like, tell me what was happening or what is happening that you believe person in position of influence or potentially senior leadership role that makes us successful. Give it to me in your words. And once you've had those conversations and you can start to take it away, put it into maybe some more broad buckets, some more broad statements that then you can take to broader organization, populations within the organization and start gathering feedback there. And really what happens after that, it becomes something so beautiful and organic that it's like, yeah, like, maybe Andrea, you or I become the voice of those competencies because we're rolling them out as part of our roles or part of our jobs. But in reality, I'm just speaking on behalf of the other 200 people in our business that are, you know, listed on this slide kind of thing that gave their input on behalf of you, the people. It's dare I say it's democratic to a certain extent. And again, that becomes so. And the reason I suggest that you talk to leaders and get what made them successful is you're not going up to someone randomly in a hallway and just saying, "Hey, what would be a good competency? What would you like to see here?" Because you're going to end up with, as you can imagine, 50 or more different versions of different things and what have you. Whereas if you can say, "Look, these are the things that happened that made us successful," whether it be, you know, certainly in the energy sector, it was about safe practice, or if it's in the tech sector, it's about innovative philosophy or something to that extent. And then you start to build those into, okay, what are the competencies that make those up? And then you can go to people in those bigger populations, say, what do you think of this? How does it land? As opposed to going to them with a blank slate. Honestly, it's the best advice I can give. It's been the most successful practice I've observed. Doesn't mean it's the best, doesn't mean it's the right way, because I don't think there is a right or a best way. It's probably what works for you. But if there's advice I could give, that would be it.
Do you have any other kind of tips? So you've defined it, but now you're going to roll it out to do something, whether that's learning and development or incorporating it into your performance. Do you have any other tips on, as you start to think about that, things you should be considering?
Yes. So yeah, a good question. So three, and I got to make sure I remember the three. The first is recognizing that you're a salesperson in that seat. To quote Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glen Ross, you got to always be closing. So the simple posting of competencies on your intranet or so forth isn't enough, because people will be like, oh, cool, I guess I'll just keep doing my job. You got to go out and sell the idea that these competencies matter. Then next step is you got to provide opportunities for people to grow those companies. So if any one person sits in on a town hall or listens to a video that, or observes a video that you made, and they get to the finish line and they're like, oh my goodness, yes, communicates with impact. I love that competency. I receive feedback on it all the time that I'm not quite there. Where do I go? So the next stage is to make sure that immediately there's a place for them to go and get that development. And then the third bucket for me, it comes back to that measurement element, which is, okay, if I, Adam Culligan, sat in that town hall and thought, communicates with impact, I need to improve. Then I went to my learning and development team and I said, okay, I really want to grow this. I've set a goal in my performance plan for the year. I want to become a better public speaker. Great. Go and take this program, enroll in this, and continue to practice. And then we have to measure to provide feedback and or a positive consequence for that individual. It needs to be recognized as something of value, which is, if you've got kids, that's what raising kids is like. If you've got organizations that you're responsible for, you know, that's what it's like. When you want to see new behaviors, you got to A, identify what the behavior is, B, help someone improve it if they need to, and C, measure and reward when it happens. It I don't know, Andrea, I don't know if you feel the same way as me, but sometimes I think we can certainly overcomplicate these pieces and be like, it's as simple as just telling people what you want, helping them deliver it, and then making sure they get rewarded when they do deliver it.
Basic psychology 101.
Yeah, I remember from Ed Psych 101 for sure.
Well, that was actually the last question I had for you today, Adam. Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
Be brave. Don't worry about having to make sure that it lines up to something that the Harvard Business School put out or that Wharton says is the ideal way forward. If it works for your company, it works for your company and it works for your culture. Go ahead and be bold, be brave. Don't worry about what the outsiders think.
Well said. So I do want to thank you, Adam, for coming on the show today. And listeners, if you want to reach out to Adam and pick his brain about anything that we've talked about today, the best place to do so would be on LinkedIn. So thanks again, Adam.
My pleasure, Andrea. Thank you.
And thanks to everyone for listening.